All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, as we go straight out to the HRNP guest line. Joining us now, Sam Amico. You can follow him on Twitter at Amico Hoops. Covers the NBA for HoopsWire.com. Sam, thanks for taking a few minutes and joining us. NBA Draft Week, us in Houston, obviously going to be a busy week. Three first-round draft picks, of course, the one at the top, number three. Is there a scenario that exists where Paolo Banchero is not a Houston Rocket come Friday morning?
I'd be surprised. I think most people around the league would be surprised. It's not real clear on who's going number one, whether it's going to be Jabari Smith from Auburn or Chet Holmgren from Gonzaga, but the consensus right now is that those two are going in the top two, and if that obviously will leave you with Banchero, who, that's not a bad get. At one point, he was considered maybe potentially the number one overall pick. So any of those three guys really are, kind of the main three guys in this draft. So to answer your question, I do think that just from hearing the buzz that Banchero will be going to Houston at three.
Sam, how do you think he fits? Because I compare him to Julius Randle when he came out, of the people that he came out around, when he was the most NBA-ready, the most physically mature already, but also a guy that maybe doesn't have quite the upside as the other two guys. How do you see him fitting in the NBA, and then how does he fit with this young Rockets crew?
Well, I think that more than anything, as you just said, he probably is, out of those three guys that we just mentioned, the guy who's going to be most likely to make an impact right away. Maybe he doesn't have a huge upside, but again, after trading Christian Wood, he's going to get a ton of opportunities should he end up in Houston. Well, any of those three guys would get a big opportunity because they're all three center power forward types. So you really look at things. Obviously, if you're the Rockets, you're looking for another young player who can develop and grow with, the likes of Sengun and Jalen Green and Kevin Porter Jr. And in that sense, he would fit in perfectly because he gives you that kind of fresh, guy who's coming into a new situation, a fresh start with other guys who have just been in a new situation / fresh start. So in that sense, he would fit in very well, and he would certainly get plenty of opportunities, which, a lot of rookies, they even top 3-5 picks end up going to a situation where they're, being brought along slowly. So that will not be the case with whoever the Rockets draft at three.
Sam, you mentioned the trade of Christian Wood that opens up some minutes down in the paint for the Houston Rockets, for Banchero if he's the pick, for Alpi Shingun, who's around as well. What did you make of that trade, the Christian Wood trade to Dallas for their first-round pick, 26, and then some cap filler to make the trade work? Who do you think won? What did you think of it from a Rockets point of view?
I like that for the Rockets point of view. Crazy perhaps nationally as that sounds. Because they really did just get back, pieces and parts and really guys who are going to be reserves, maybe even third stringers, and guys like Sutton Burke and Marjanovic. But the point of that trade is when you're a young team, you want to develop the right culture, right? The right locker room. And I'm not saying Wood was bad for that, but he may not have been someone they valued as a long-term fit, only because of some of those things. And when you're a team of young players or a younger roster, you want to make sure that you have a guy and people who can come in and kind of lead by example. And, obviously the contract situation, it kind of felt like Wood was going to leave at some point very soon, and that makes it very difficult to build when you have somebody who's kind of serving in a distraction in that sense. So I like the trade for the Rockets. I don't want to go as, sounds nasty to say addition by subtraction, but in this case, it really is. You're clearing the room to let the younger guys play some more, and not now look, you don't have any of those distractions at all. Maybe Eric Gordon in the sense that, well, he's probably curious about his future. They're curious about the future. But while he's been in Houston, even last season, he's been, you know, a true professional, a pro's pro. So if he's still around, that's not an issue or serving as a distraction. So I think it was a good deal for the Rockets, and this will allow them to kind of get that weight off their shoulders and move forward with a young core.
Sam, I'm curious your thoughts on Chet Holmgren, because at one point people thought he was the consensus one overall. We've talked about it on the show numerous times that, look, he comes with a skill set that's very, very rare. I think it's unfair when the early comparisons were a Kevin Durant type. But the one thing that Jeremy and I have discussed is, depending on who he's matching up with in the NBA, the biggest thing is going to be, does he have the quickness to be able to go by people or the post game to be able to capitalize and score on people, because they're grown men in the NBA. It's going to be a different type of game for him and how long it may take him to develop.
Yeah, you know, those are all fair questions. He kind of reminds me of more of an Evan Mobley type we saw last year with the Cavaliers. Mobley and Holmgren both need to put on some weight, but I think he's a guy who has NBA skills. A lot of scouts will tell you his skills are NBA ready, and that part of that is because he does have a nice touch. He's got a quick release on his shot, anywhere from the perimeter extended out to the three-point line. He's got great size, pretty decent athlete. So he has all the tools. You know, a lot of it is getting in the right situation, being the right fit in the right place, getting the right opportunity, and having a coaching staff and teammates around him who help build his confidence. That's just the case in any situation when you draft a guy. You know, I once had a general manager tell me that, you know, prospects in the draft are really hard to predict because you're dealing with human beings. You're not dealing with, you know, you don't go out and buy a vacuum cleaner and everybody says, well, this one works this way and it's going to work this way on any carpet. It has to be the right situation for a player. But as far as his skills, yeah, there are some questions about, you know, does he have the quickness to be a super-duper star? But, you know, I think as far as his actual skills and his mindset, he seems like a very mature kid. He should be a hit pretty quickly, I would think.
I didn't expect to talk about vacuums whenever we had you on, Sam, but I really do
Hoover?
Like the comparison. Yeah, Hoover was the very best in the business. You mentioned the Rockets' young core, and Houston's looking at the number three pick to couple with Jalen Green, and there's your foundation to try to build around. At least that's the optimistic thought from our city. Watching Jalen Green in year one as a rookie, what were some things you liked? What were some areas he still needs to work on to be part of a foundation for what Houston's hoping will someday be a playoff team?
One thing you like, obviously, is his explosiveness, you know, and the fact that he can fill it up. Those are two big things. And, you know, even you're talking about a guy, remember, again, we see this all the time, year two or year three is when players really start to get comfortable in the NBA, usually year three. He looks pretty comfortable already. So that's the thing, is everybody needs, you know, especially in a league now that's predicated on wing play, right? So many of the stars we see in today's game, we just saw how, you know, Andrew Wiggins played such a huge role for the Warriors and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown with the Celtics. You know, those type of wing players are invaluable. And he kind of fits that mold where explosive wing guy can score from anywhere. And, you know, I think the one thing that you're hoping to get, obviously this comes with time, is some consistency and some kind of better shot selection, knowing when to shoot, when to give it up. And those things come with just playing, and you know, it does a veteran like Eric Gordon around him, because anytime you have a young potential star like that, it really benefits them to have a veteran around. So if the Rockets beat Keith Gordon, that's a good thing. Could help Jalen out quite a bit. But, you know, that's tons of upside. So you can't complain about that. And I think once he gets into the other players developing around him and he presumably the Rockets start winning more, and he's in a better situation, he'll play even better.
Sam, I'm curious from a national perspective, your thoughts on Kevin Porter Jr. We know that he's got a ton of talent. We also know that there's an undercurrent that the Rockets are trying to keep kind of under wraps about the issues, you know, kind of an extension of the issues he had when he was in Cleveland. But he's coming up on the last year of his deal, and you wonder, do the Rockets with three first-round picks start looking at a potential point guard that might be able to take his place, or in a prove-it season, is he the kind of guy the Rockets should also be building their future around?
Yeah, this is a make-or-break year for him. There's no question about that, at least in Houston. And I'm sure that they could potentially, you know, I'm sure they're going to spend part of this season working the phones as every general manager around the NBA is doing, like Brad Pitt and Moneyball, and seeing if what somebody might give them for Kevin Porter Jr. You know, you don't want to just give him away, obviously, but there are a lot of factors to consider. You said there's kind of that undercurrent of is he going to be on the straight and narrow the whole time and not serve as a distraction as he kind of did in Cleveland and at times last year in Houston. But, you know, the worst thing could happen than them keeping him and giving him another year to develop again. Another extremely young guy that sometimes you just got to be patient with and live with the inconsistency. Is he a point guard? Is he a shooting guard? I mean, those are things that if you're the Houston Rockets, you can take some time and figure that out. You don't have to be in a big rush to unload guys. I think that they will explore trades. That's not to say they're being aggressive about it or super active, but I think that there's a possibility that he could be moved just based on outside interest.
Sam, I know draft week's very busy for you, so we appreciate the time, and happy draft week, and hope to chat again very soon.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for having me, and I will go take some time and vacuum right now.
Best of luck. Sam Amico, senior NBA writer for HoopsWire.com. Follow him on Twitter at Amico Hoops. Draft day coming up on Thursday. We're going to take a look at some of the options for the Houston Rockets, one every day up to the draft starting today at 2:30. So make sure you're listening to that. Coming up next, Lovie Smith. He's a new head coach in the NFL again, a new head coach again in the NFL. But amongst the new head coaches in the NFL, is Lovie Smith in the worst situation of all those guys? We discuss when we return. Skiller Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Get know when the whistle goes. Real fun. Get know when the whistle goes. Sports. ESPN 97.5. Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Good stuff from Sam Amico. NBA Draft Week coming up on Thursday. 2:30, we're going to start taking a look at the four most potential names that the Rockets will call on Thursday. We'll do one a day, take a look at their game, how they could fit, how they wouldn't fit. Joining us now, calling in on the HRMP listener line, I should say, Keith, after our conversation with Sam Amico, has some basketball on his mind, 713-780-3776. Keith, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up?
Hello, guys. How's it going? With the draft coming up, I was kind of wondering, and this came from watching Hustle, which was way better than any given Sunday as far as authenticity and everything. With you guys working in that realm, coming from both the college level and the pro level, where are those hidden gems like that were displayed in the movie? That guy out there that the Rockets may need or could get that nobody's heard of, nobody, that he's low on the radar, but he could be organically become a superstar, but nobody just knows about it. I enjoy the show. I'll hang up and listen.
Appreciate the call, Keith.
You got any?
Have you seen Hustle?
I have not. I heard great things about it. My buddies told me I need to see it.
Do you know how to turn on Netflix?
Yeah, I have Netflix, smartass.
I heard that it's Adam Sandler's
best work. Yep.
Best works in Spanglish. Don't at me.
Jeez.
What's interesting about like a lot of the prospects though in the NBA, like if it's not a draft and store guy, like an international guy, they're going to be a free agent in 4 years. Like, especially if you're, I mean, if you're drafting them in the first round. And it's one of the, like, I look at this in the NFL draft a lot. First rounder, obviously 4 years, you get the fifth year option. Anybody second through seventh, you can work a 4 year deal with them. Like, you want a player to be pretty good right away. Otherwise, like, what is the point of a projection or a player that you're trying to develop? And then all of a sudden you get to year four, and now he shows flashes of being good, but still not somebody you really want to pay. And now he's a free agent. Like, that's one of the difficult things about the NBA draft is because I feel like you get to the second part of the first round. Second round, usually you start to get a lot of the draft and store guys because it kind of works as a pipeline. You draft an international player. You don't want him to be on your team yet. It doesn't start his rookie contract, so you just let him go play overseas for a while, keep playing overseas for a while, and then once he's better, you bring him in. So, like, it's a difficult thing. Like, I think there's some players that would be available in the second part of the first round that would come in here and be pretty good players.
I was going to say, he said superstar. That's a reach. See, I think good players is a different story.
Like, if we're talking like superstar, that, and again, this is like a total shot in the wind, but I do like this prospect a lot, and it's probably somebody that wouldn't play here right now. Like, you could probably draft him, keep him playing overseas. He's currently playing overseas right now, so you wouldn't be starting his rookie clock, who I think has a chance to be pretty good, is the Nikolai Jovic. I don't know exactly that that's how to say his name.
It is.
But he's got a lot of similarities in my mind that Chet Holmgren does, and Chet Holmgren's going to be drafted in the top three.
There's a lot of people talking about him, but I think that much like Clint Capella, the problem is that he is hell-bent on getting to the NBA, whereas, like Clint Capella, the Rockets wanted to stash him for a couple of years. Right. Once he came in for the draft, and if you remember, he sat in the seats at the draft because it was such a big deal, and then he came to Houston and wasn't leaving, so Daryl had a choice to make. But I think you're right. I think there's high hopes for that kid because he does have the potential to even continue to develop into more.
Yeah, see, he's one that I've had my eye on because I think he's kind of, if you're looking at just draft prospects in 2022 and just comparing it relative to the other draft prospects in 2022, I think he's kind of a poor man's Chet Holmgren, and you're not drafting him in the top five. Chet's, you know, going to go number three. And right now, I'm just looking at the NBA draft.net mock draft. Jovic is being selected 23. So he's going to be second half of the first round. You probably don't even need to use your lottery pick to draft him. He probably would go before 26. So if you needed him, you're going to have to like do like some sort of trade, or you just take him at 17.
So I'm going to give you two because they're going to have more of a feel for what the Rockets could use too. I think they would be really good picks, either one of them, for this Rockets team. But I'm going to give you one, and I'm going to go with your relative first. But Malachi Branham from Ohio State is being compared to a poor man's Ray Allen.
Yeah.
A guy that is going to get better but can just shoot the lights out. And we know the Rockets need shooters. And as much as they were enamored with Gary Bird a year ago, Gary Bird is not a long-term fit for this Houston Rockets team. This is a kind of kid that can develop alongside the nucleus you already have, but he brings an element that you don't have, and that is sharp dead-eye shooting. And the other kid along those same lines,
I like Branham. I just think he's going to go in the lotto. I don't think he's
going to go that high.
Yeah, I think he's going to
be
that high.
I had seen the last couple times that at 17 he could be available for them.
This one, and look, this is just one that I pulled up real quick. He's going number 14, and you're hearing a lot of his buzz pick up. I don't think he gets to number 17.
And again, the Rockets still have the option of saying, if I give you 17 and 26, can I move up into the top, you know, 12, 14?
I would love Branham.
So you can get him, because I think he'd be
He's been gone for a while.
And especially if, like Sam was saying, if you move on from Eric Gordon, now you move in a guy that could be your next Eric Gordon, a kind of guy that can shoot, but he's got an NBA body. He's a bigger kid. He can do some things. The other kid that's a total sleeper, but he's also getting some hype because he can shoot the absolute crap out of the basketball, is from Toledo.
Oh, I've heard of this kid.
Kid's name is Ryan Rollins.
Yeah.
He's kind of that combo guard. But when he's working out for teams right now, they're realizing he, again, has that skill that not many people have. He can shoot the ball from anywhere. And that's a kid to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I've seen some of him too. Like you said, he's very much a combo guard.
Yep.
Like he's a six man. He's like a Josh Christopher-esque. Like, I don't see him being like the main distributor of an offense. I don't see him being a point guard. I really don't even see him being like a starting shooting guard. But I think he is somebody who could come off the bench kind of like in a Bobby Jackson style, like a Josh Christopher style. We saw a little bit of that last year, and be somebody that can shoot it. A couple of other names that intrigue me that are going to be available, I think, in the second half. The Christian Coloco kid from Arizona has all of the measurables. I didn't love like his physical nature. Like, he wasn't, like, the grittiest of players. Some would say he was kind of soft. I don't know if I want to go as far to call him soft, but he kind of has the Capella skill set where he's tall, he's lengthy, he's a good rebounder, can protect the rim. If you're looking for, like, a defensive-minded, not going to give you any sort of offense, Koloko is somebody that I like that could be available around that. This projection has him in the second round. I think he ends up getting in the first round. Jalen Duren, if he slides to you at 17, another player in that mold.
Well, you know I like him a lot.
Yeah, he's... Going to Memphis didn't help out his NBA draft prowess a whole lot because they don't develop a whole lot there.
Plus, he was playing behind some guys that came in with more hype but didn't have the Monty kind of
Bates.
Skills.
Yeah, he got hurt, though. And look,
if he doesn't get hurt, he would have been buried even more.
Duren's not a scorer. Like, no. Duren is very much a rim-protecting five that's going to play really good defense, block some shots, I think be a Clint Capella type. So he's somebody that if you want to go that route. The Jaden Hardy kid's also somebody that is intriguing me because I've seen him slide in drafts, whereas early this offseason or early in the season, he was being projected like top 10. So Hardy, somebody, especially if you want a shooter, where a little bit undersized as a shooting guard but can shoot the heck out of it, probably not as good a ball handler to be a point guard, but a couple of options. And ultimately, I do think that the Rockets trade do something in the first round. I don't think they're going to have three first-rounders out of this draft. I think they're looking to package 17, 26, maybe even a veteran, maybe a Gordon. I don't think Kevin Martin Jr.
after the first draft. I think Kenyon Martin Jr. is a guy that's been wanted out for a while.
But I just don't know how much value he has.
No, but I think comboed with, and this might be tough for Rockets fans to accept, but again, because you've been very good about pointing out the fact that, you know, Jayson Tate is not exactly 19-20 like the rest of this team.
Yeah.
He's a poor man's P.J. Tucker that's a younger version that veteran teams are going to want. And if you could take a Tate along with 17 and 26, I think you could get something more for to get more of what you're looking for. And I think you could end up with a better player or two that could help you.
A couple of teams that I've read that could be interested in something like that. I'm not going to say that exact trade. I've heard that Portland could be looking for some veterans. So, like, if you were to do something like that with Portland, who's drafting number 7, that seems like a pretty high climb to get up that high. Like, now you're looking at maybe adding some future stuff, too. But Portland could add a couple of veterans and still not have, like, fall out of the first round. They could still add some youth, so it could make sense for them. And I've heard that the Knicks might be looking to add some veteran presence, too, or, like, maybe that you could trade up for number 11 to get the pick for the Knicks. You know, you still have the first rounders because you'd be probably packaging 17, 26 plus. So the Knicks would still have some young projects and draft picks as well, but then also getting a veteran cherry on top, a la Eric Gordon. I don't know if they'd be interested in Gordon, but just a couple of teams to monitor if the Rockets are trading up that want some veterans, Portland and New York.
I would have three teams to watch for if Gordon gets moved. That would be Miami, that would be Philadelphia, and that'd be Phoenix, because the deal had our Phoenix offered and knows after the playoffs they need a third scorer. And Eric Gordon would be the fit, and that the Rockets balked at the low level of a first-round pick from Phoenix, and when they came back to get it, Phoenix didn't want it. Now they might. So I would say, in Eric Gordon's case, I would watch Phoenix, Philly, and Miami.
Yeah. The thing with that, though, is Phoenix didn't have a first, and Miami and Philly are drafting in the 20s, so now it's probably a three-way.
But go back to what we were – I forget who we had on last week that said for the potential of picks when you don't have your first-round pick.
Right.
So it could be 2-3 years down the line. As long as you add a first-round pick in a year, you don't have one.
Add the capital.
It has importance to you.
I like the idea of that. I could also see a three-way where one of those two teams is trying to, you know, add the veteran, all that stuff that, you know, takes place on draft day. Even though NBA draft, they don't announce the trades right away, which always stinks. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, when we come back, we'll take a look at that. Lovie Smith, is he in the worst situation of all of the new head coaches? And also, look, the Texans don't have a whole lot built in the foundation, right? They're trending in the right way. We believe that. But is there a playoff team from this past season in the NFL that the Houston Texans should copycat the way they built their team? That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting InnovationMap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We teased the question, already getting some reaction. Which 2021 team in the NFL should the Texans try to copycat? Don't tell Nick Caserio, but the Houston Texans are a rebuilding team. Fair? Fair? Fair?
Sure, fair, 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 Mike Meltzer, fair.
Texans are a rebuilding team. And look, I think that we've been pretty positive with where the direction's going. Like, we also understand that there is a long way to go. We understand that there's a short time. Just kidding. But they were at rock bottom. The Texans were at rock bottom. The lowest, you know, approval rating for the Houston Texans in franchise history is somewhere within the last 12 to 18 months. Look, I don't think that they've actually climbed that much higher. Like, if the approval rating was at a zero for the Houston Texans, rock bottom, worst it's ever been in franchise history, I think now it could be like to a 15, 20, like on a scale of 1 to 100. Like, they still got a long way to go. Is it moving up? Yeah, it's moving up. But there's still a long way to go. And look, they've only had 1.5 draft classes for Nick Caserio. The first year didn't have a first or a second. I think he did pretty well for what he had. The 2022 NFL draft class has not stepped on the field yet, but you like what Nick Caserio has done. You like the draft capital that he's built up, and you like the fact that he's totally changed the salary cap perception of this team to where they put themselves in a position where they could be players in the next few years. So overall, I think Caserio has done a very good job, but still a long way to go. So Caserio has a plan for this rebuild. Don't tell him I said that. But which 2021 playoff team in the NFL do you think the Texans could copycat, try to build themselves, mold themselves after to get back to where the Texans want to be in the postseason?
It's interesting because the question I would follow first say, but what's the time frame? Or does it matter?
No, it doesn't really matter. It's more of what a team has done, how they got there. I don't think that if it's, you know, 2 years or 5 years, it's more the model and the philosophy of said team.
I think Cincinnati Bengals come to mind right away because as bad as they were for an extended period of time, they capitalized and used their draft picks the right way, and they got it right with the guys that they drafted. Even I questioned taking Ja'Marr Chase when you knew how bad their offensive line was. And you knew the fact that Burrow's season, his rookie season, when he was the most valuable draft pick maybe in the history of the franchise, at least ever since Carson Palmer, you're looking at it and you're going, my God, you got the guy killed, and you almost stunted his potential growth to be a superstar with you, and yet you're going to take his favorite receiver from college instead of protecting the man when you could find other receivers. I was wrong, but they still had a huge issue with the offensive line, and though he didn't get another significant injury, they had to address it after a great run to get to the Super Bowl. But when you look at the way that they are a significantly cheap team, as we know, and they don't like to overspend.
Mm-hmm.
But what they did do was they balanced well the spending with the draft picks, and they got back to a place of prominence that I don't think a lot of people thought they could get to again.
The Bengals, when you look at their model, because that's one that, I mean, look, we're considering the playoff teams that were there. I think that there are... The difference with the Bengals and perhaps some of the other teams, and maybe the Bengals are more similar to a lot of the other teams actually, is the fact that they went out and they drafted Joe Burrow, number one, right? And you started to build around Joe Burrow. So, like, the Texans would have to go that route, which I don't think we're dismissing. I think we're probably closer to being draft a quarterback in 2023 than we are Davis Mills being the quarterback going into 2023. Like, if we had to pick one of those two, who's the starting quarterback for the Texans in 2023, a rookie quarterback you select in the top 5 to 7 picks, or Davis Mills? Which of those two would you pick?
I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not going to go the Davis Mills route, but and a lot of people are going to jump on me for that because now you're supposed to be a full-time believer in Davis Mills, and you believe that when he's given this opportunity, he's just going to blossom into this, right, into great things. I'm not there yet. I've always believed he had the potential to play in this league. I didn't know at what level or to what degree, but I'm also not ready to anoint him and say, hey, this is your franchise quarterback going forward.
If I'm having to answer the question, I believe that it's more likely that you draft a rookie quarterback, especially if you're talking about the way that these playoff teams were built. Because if you are going the Davis Mills route, then you're probably looking at Las Vegas with David Carr's brother as the way you're building your team, which, like, I don't think Las Vegas is a Super Bowl contender. Like, I like that they added Davante Adams. I think that their offense is going to be sneaky good because I still like Waller, even though he's older. He's in his, you know, getting closer to his mid-30s, and I love Hunter Renfrow. He's one of my favorite players in the NFL. I still don't think they're anywhere near the cream of the crop in the AFC.
And I'm thinking about it when you ask that question because a lot of this is so organic. That's when Cincinnati was the first team that popped to mind. But when I look at that too, I say, look, if you're going to base it on Davis Mills, you better have a hell of a running game. You better be almost Derrick Henry-esque with Tennessee. Right? Yeah, you better be a kind of team that can survive with defense and ground-and-pound football that occasionally when a guy needs to make a throw can read his progressions and make the right read and get the ball where it needs to be delivered. But he's not going to win a game with his arm or his legs like other guys in this league, and that's something that you have to be content with if that's the direction you choose to go with Davis Mills.
And look, you can get to the playoffs, and you can be a threat, I think, because now you're talking about like Tennessee with Ryan Tannehill, but a running game, strong defense, and a sharp head coach. Las Vegas, look, I think that Derek Carr's fine as an NFL quarterback. I think he's somewhere in that top 10 area. Maybe Davis Mills can mature into that. Or Philly. Like, I don't think that Jalen Hurts is, you know, head and shoulders above Davis Mills. So you could go that route as well, although Philly last year was, you know, the last team into the playoffs. The team that I think would be the one to follow, and Poncho on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, he said the Texans should never copy anyone else's model of building a team. They've been burned twice doing that, Broncos South and Patriots South, which I think is a fair point. Not Santa saying none, embrace the suck. I think to me, it's Buffalo. Because Buffalo had a very strong defense, so you're putting together at least a baseline there where you can be competitive in football games with your defense. And I think the Texans are going down that route where they're starting to put the pieces together of what you think could be a competitive defense, I think as soon as the second half of 2022. There's too many rookies for them to be like a top 15 defense the first 8-9 weeks of this season. I think they can start to turn into that in the second half, and more realistically in 2023 with the Harris, with the Stingley, with the Petrie, with Grenard, and all the other role players they have there as well. So if you build that baseline of defense with Buffalo, I think you can follow that path and you can be competitive. But then on the offensive side, they made a bold decision with Josh Allen. That was not a popular pick. There wasn't a lot of
believers. There was a lot of concern that he was going to be a flop.
Exactly, and he did not play all that well in his first year.
Yep.
His first year was pretty bad. His second year got better, and he's turned in to become, you know, this one of the best quarterbacks in all of the NFL. But you have to be bold with your decision at quarterback. And look, Caserio can be bold in two different ways. He can be bold where he's like, yeah, Davis Mills is going to be our guy because we believe in him, and if you don't tough, we're going to prove you wrong. Which Buffalo did that with Josh Allen after his rookie year, after he was drafted from Wyoming. They could also be bold and say, you know what, Davis Mills has been pretty good, but he hasn't been good enough, so we're going to go get our Josh Allen and then build around them. So if I'm looking at the playoff teams from last year, all 14, I love the Buffalo model. I think the Buffalo model is the way to go. And then you look at McDermott as a head coach, too. Defensive-minded head coach, much like Lovie Smith.
Yeah, and I think that in 2 degrees of what you were conversing about, I would say that I would look at the Raiders this year, too, and I'd say there's never been more pressure on Carr than there is this season, because now there's nothing else. There's no excuses. You've got an offensive-minded new head coach that is known as a hot commodity that knows how to, you know, take anything from Tom Brady to Mac Jones and make them serviceable and better. But now you've got every resource in the book. You've got a young running back in Jacobs. You've got three receivers, including Darren Waller, one of the best tight ends in football. You've got an enhanced offensive line. Now, it's basically put up or shut up time if you're Carr, and you've got all the pressure in the world on you to perform. Before, it was always like, well, you know, he's got some weapons, but, you know, we'll see what he can be down the road. Now, it's on him. I think your Buffalo analogy is one I thought about, but I wasn't sure the combination of how many good veteran players they not only had groomed or went out and got to kind of fortify the rest of the roster would make it a good comparison, because the Texans are obviously not there from a roster standpoint.
Well, I don't think you can compare where the Texans are to any of these NFL teams that made the playoffs last year, if we're being honest, because the Texans are such a blank slate. Like, I mean, they got torn down to the studs, which I don't blame Nick Caserio for doing. The situation was in a bad spot in terms of the cap. You had a roster that really wasn't all that good around Deshaun Watson. So Caserio really had no choice. But if you're going to follow one of those models, which way would you go? 713-780-ESPN. Which of the playoff teams is the best model to follow for the Houston Texans to get back into the playoffs? The AFC, you had Tennessee, Cincinnati, the Raiders, Buffalo, New England, Kansas City, Pittsburgh. And then on the NFC side, you had Green Bay, the Rams, Arizona, Dallas, San Fran, Tampa, and Philly.
And I think the other thing that's worth mentioning when you talk about whether you don't want to be the model of the Broncos or the Patriots, the one thing is the guys that are in positions of power for your franchise, and particularly Nick Caserio, and the fact that where they came from leaves a mark on you. And where they came from, we keep reminding people, is a place where one quarterback isn't enough, no matter how good he is, even if he's Tom Brady. You are always going to be ballsy enough to take another one, because that quarterback either could have value for you as a backup that ends up being the starter, or a guy that has trade value that you get more in return than where you picked him initially. As long as your system and your teaching capabilities are the same, and this guy really can play, it's a resource worth taking a chance on.
713-780-3776. Which model is the right way to go?
Jeremy, you said you can't compare them to any of last year's playoff teams in terms of where they are right here, right now.
Yeah, the rosters.
I actually think there is one team from last year's playoff that is a pretty good comparison.
All right, let's do that on the other side. You can let us know, too, which of the playoff the teams, Lions. The 14s.
They weren't in the playoffs.
The 14 teams in the NFL last year, which plan, which rebuild should the Texans go? Which one do you like the best? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Look, they're great people, and they really care about their patients. And the fact of the matter is that you're not going there to try and win a gold medal. You're trying to win the day. And when you try to win the day, you're just trying to make sure you maximize every day with the kind of energy and effort that you had when you felt your best, whatever age that might have been. And you feel like in a lot of cases it's passing you by. I talked to friends back home, including today, and they were like, man, I got to talk to you because I need to see if you can talk to me about what's going on with the fact that I don't have any energy anymore. And I'm happy to talk to them, but I'm even more so happy to direct them to the people at Apollo Men's Health because they can guide you through getting where you want to be, where you used to be. Maybe you're not there anymore. And it's all the different ways that you have things going on in your life. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, you have problems where it used to be no problem. Well, they can help. And it starts with the fact that you set up a consultation. Go to ApolloMH.com, make an appointment. Basically, most major insurance is accepted. There's discounts for military personnel and first responders. But everybody needs to sit down and just talk to somebody, and they can explain to you how they can help. You want to get on a workout program? They can take care of it. Starts with a full body composition analysis. You want to recover quicker because you're sore after the gym? They have HGH peptide therapy. And all the different ways they can give you energy in your life, starting with a B12 shot, getting into all the different ways that they do hormone therapy for both men and for women. But it's worth a conversation to see if it's right for you. What do you got to lose? They're going to take care of you every step of the way. If you go with them, they'll put you on a plan that works and get you results. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by. You get that full body composition analysis or a free B12 shot on your first official visit just by saying you listen to us. But they're good people doing great things. Check them out today. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Hall of Fame, Billy Sims. And you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Well, we were discussing the playoff teams from last year. Houston Texans are rebuilding, don't tell Nick Caserio. 14 playoff teams last year. Which of those teams do you think has the best plan for a remodel, a rebuild for their roster, like the Houston Texans are in now? Brendan said he had one that fits the Houston Texans to a T. What is it, Brendan? What's the team that has the right philosophy?
Well, hold on now. I'm not saying it's the right philosophy. In fact, I would almost tell you it's the exact wrong philosophy.
Then why would the Texans do that?
I'm not saying they should. I'm saying there is one team who they already line up pretty well with. And that one team they already line up pretty well with is the Eagles.
Okay.
The Eagles, in large part, were in the playoffs because they played in a bad division. And I think the Texans have that same path. Both of them also, with the quarterback, they're not paying very much. Whether or not you believe they're good, I think the general consensus is they're good enough on a rookie contract. I don't believe it's the right path. If I had to point to a team and say that's who I would try to replicate, I like the Bills. I actually think the Raiders are interesting because I don't think they did it on the back of their quarterback, but their quarterback is certainly capable.
Yeah.
He's good. But I just think the Eagles are the closest to where you are. Like, it's not unthinkable that the first time, I'm not talking next year, but whenever you eventually see the Texans in the playoffs again, it's not unthinkable it's because they're in a bad division and they're just good enough to beat up on their division opponents.
They only go 9-8. Like, yeah. I mean, the Eagles were one game above 500 last year.
And they, you know, they obviously won a bad division. But when you look at it, too, the thing that I would push back on the Eagles is how many guys that they've gone out and just thrown money at, like Darius Slay. And Darius Slay was never the Darius Slay of the Lions when he came to the Eagles, but they were throwing money at him, and they were, you know, now they're going big time and going with AJ Brown and throwing big money at him. But until you can get someone that can deliver the ball to him consistently, then aren't you just kind of throwing money at the wall and hope it sticks and that eventually it all comes together? That's why I don't know that that's the plan they should follow, because quarterback is such a crapshoot for them, and they're actually right now in a worse position than the Texans because I think they're sticking with a guy that has far less capabilities of sustaining being a starting quarterback in the NFL than Davis Mills.
I want to make sure it's clear. I don't think they should model themselves after the Eagles. I think that is a bad idea. I just think it's the team they're closest to.
I think, I agree with that they're as close to the Eagles as anybody else, but I would say that the reason that they're as close to the Eagles as anybody else is because the Eagles were the worst playoff team in the NFL. Of those 14 teams, if we're looking at the 14 playoff teams, I think they would be dead last. So, yeah, I think that the roster is the closest to the Eagles if anything else, but it is weird how the Eagles are building it. Like, it's almost like the reverse engineering. The way that normal teams normally build their roster, which I don't know if it's going to end up being the worst thing in the world because you have a decent enough defense, right? You have a decent enough defense that you go 9-8. Really, that was the strong part of your team. You already had a Devontae Smith there who was the Heisman Trophy winner just a couple of seasons ago. And to be quite honest, he had a pretty solid rookie year despite Jalen Hurts throwing him the football. And like you mentioned, you go out and you get an A.J. Brown to try to help out the quarterback position. But they also, to where I would push back to your point, is that they haven't invested in Jalen Hurts. Like, they haven't went out and gotten another quarterback.
They've committed to him. They haven't invested.
Exactly. And that's, to me, where, like, I still think they're okay. Like, giving Jalen Hurts, like, committing to Jalen Hurts and giving Jalen Hurts a chance on his rookie contract, that's okay to me. Where I would balk at the idea is if you give Jalen Hurts top 10 quarterback money and now you're committing to him for the next seven seasons. Well, and they still have the draft capital, too, where if Jalen Hurts does not have success with Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown, which if he doesn't have success with those two, then you should be in the quarterback market to where now two things. You have the draft capital. You can attack the quarterback position in the draft, trading up, whatever the case may be. Or you could be a major player for a veteran like Matthew Stafford on the trade market or if anybody hits free agency.
Here's where I would say the difference between the two is that the Texans wisely are giving basically a one-year leash to Davis Mills. And after a year, you're going to gather all that data, and then you're going to make the decision one way or the other. Not that you're going to immediately jump out and find the end-all, be-all for the next 7 to 10 years, but 1 year is enough. Like, they made the playoffs with a guy that, to me, isn't worthy of being a starting quarterback in the NFL. And in a lot of ways was the reason why they lost in the playoffs. Because, believe it or not, they were in the game early against Tampa Bay, but they just didn't do anything to move the football. And you could come out of that and say, hey, look, we know the rest of our team is pretty damn good. We made the playoffs with this guy quarterback. We even enhanced what we've done a year ago by getting one of the best receivers in football to kind of add to what we already had. But that should also be the reason why I go out and find a veteran short-term quarterback if I couldn't find one elsewhere and say, I gave him a shot. This team's too good to not have a better option at quarterback. And you're still probably going to get that quarterback relatively cheap.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I'd take another swing and miss with Jalen Hurts for another full season.
The thing with that, though, is, like, what backup quarterback are you going to bring in where if Jalen Hurts fails that you're really going to be a contender anyways? So I like, hesitate to bring in that veteran because, one, I think if your starting quarterback gets hurt in the NFL, there's almost zero backup quarterbacks that you're going to be a serious contender with. It's why Nick Foles winning a Super Bowl is such an anomaly. But I do like the idea of, okay, Jalen Hurts, like, it might even be just on the facade. It might just even be the perception. Jalen Hurts, you're our quarterback. You go get him. Where you're talking behind closed doors. Okay, well, if he really doesn't go get him, we're going to be in the market for a quarterback. So, like, I do like the idea, and the Texans are doing this too, except they're not really a playoff team, and they didn't trade for A.J. Brown or have Devontae Smith, where you're not bringing in a Baker Mayfield. You're not bringing in a capable backup because you're giving the will to the quarterback that's already there.
But that's what I'm saying, Jeremy. You don't have to go get a veteran that you're going to say is the backup quarterback with a chance to start at some point if he falters.
Right.
You have the hard decision in the offseason, and it's a business decision. It's no hard feelings, but there's going to be hard feelings. But you go, you know what? We took a shot at this kid. We didn't use high draft capital to get him. We gave him an opportunity. We know at the end of the day who he is and what he did wasn't enough for us. So we can go to him and say, we'll try and trade you if you want out. If you want to be the backup, we'll look at that.
You're talking about right now?
I'm talking about in the offseason, this offseason. That's why if I was using the model, I would say the thing that's tough for a general manager is after seeing Hurts for one full season, I would have said, hey, if I went out and get a veteran quarterback, this team is a much better team with a chance to actually win a playoff game or two. I might have kicked the tires on Mariota before he went to Atlanta. I may have looked at a guy that otherwise, and you even mentioned a Mayfield, but if I feel like Mayfield gave me a better chance to win in the short term on the last year of his deal than going another year with Jalen Hurts because of the rest of my roster, I owe it to my fan base, my organization, and my locker room to do that.
See, I just don't think that a Mariota is going to make you more of a Super Bowl contender. In fact,
well,
I think
Super Bowl's a stretch,
right? But if like, what's the point then? Because
to try and progress and win, get deeper into the playoffs, and if he continues to develop,
I think Hurts has more upside than Mariota, though. Like Hurts is younger, and you've seen less of him. Mariota's kind of committed, and like we've seen who he is going to be.
But in small sample sizes, it looks like he learned some things, because when he played for the Raiders, he could use his legs still, but he still made passes. He could do some things.
Jalen Hurts does that too, though.
But I think Mariota's a better passer than Jalen Hurts.
I think they're very similar. I think it's the same tier of quarterback. I think he may be slightly better, but Hurts can be a slightly better runner. And he's still, like, because he's so young, I think he has a little bit more upside with that too. And then the Baker thing, I think one of the huge things, and even the Mariota thing, like one of the huge benefits of Jalen Hurts as your quarterback is the fact that he's on a rookie deal, the fact that he is so cheap. So you can spend less at that position to spend more elsewhere and get better in the aggregate.
But even a Jimmy G, I think that you look at a Jimmy G, and if he's not hurt, if he doesn't have the surgery, Jimmy G, after last season, if you looked at it and said, look, if we get a game manager like Jimmy Garoppolo that's also been able to take a team to a Super Bowl, to your point, and all we need him to do is come in and kind of make sure A.J. Brown touches the ball moves around a little bit, and our defense does what our defense does in a bad division where we're going to make the playoffs, I believe that we have a better chance to actually do what the fans want us to do that we think eventually we're headed towards doing. And in the meantime, it's a bridge that buys you time if you want to do something else.
Are we sleeping on the fact that the AFC South is... Are we still assuming that the AFC South is terrible? Because I don't think it's that bad.
Half of it is.
To me, you have two playoff teams in the AFC South.
Tennessee
was the top seed in the AFC South last year. The Colts were a Carson Wentz choke job away from being a playoff team.
Matt Ryan conceivably, unless he falls off a cliff, should make them better.
It should absolutely be an upgrade. That's not a hot take at all. Matt Ryan, upgrade over Carson Wentz. On top of that, Jacksonville is going to be a real football team this year. Like, they were not a real football team last year. They were a three-wheel circus, right? Like, that was embarrassing what they were last season.
Right. But when you say real football team, I think... from a structural management and coaching standpoint, they're going to be a real football team.
Sure.
But still, the roster and the overspending in free agency to not get...
But overspending means you have quality football players.
But like, are they, though?
I think so.
Yeah. I think you overpaid for a Christian Kirk.
Sure, but he's a quality football player. Like, yeah, did you overspend?
As
yeah.
Long,
are
as
you
long
getting
as you
value
have
for
other
the
quality
dollar?
Football
no,
players
good.
That are receivers so that they don't just focus on the one quality football player you added...
You also
how much better are you?
I think they're a lot better than they were a year ago.
Okay.
I think they're gonna be a top three team in the AFC South. Listen
well,
to that
okay.
hot take.
Yeah, there's a big one.
the Jags are gonna be a top three team in the AFC South. You heard it here first on the Killer Bees. But I do think Jacksonville is gonna be closer to like 7 wins than they are 4. In fact, I think the Jacksonville would be the if there's a surprise team in the AFC, it ain't the Texans. It's the Jags. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Degenerate Gambler said, follow the Rams model, bad word them picks, laughing emoji, which I don't think the Texans should be in the spot where you're doing bad things with those picks. All right, coming up next, Granato has taken me to task. I said that the Astros offense is still good enough to win a World Series. He doesn't think so. He took me to task this morning. Well, coming up next, I'm going to double down on that. I'm going to stand on the table with that take. That's coming up next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.